Je reviens, November 9th, 2009. Andrew stayed the first night at Duncan and Lisa's B&B, Chambre d'Hôte, as it said outside on the plaque. Duncan and Lisa had taken on a dilapidated old house in the medieval town of La Souterraine that had once been the residence of the Duc de Valadi, and they were well on the way to renovating it to its former grandeur. "It's great to see you. You're our only guest, so we've put you in Picardy, the posh room." Duncan showed him to his room, with its polished oak floors, four-poster bed and antique furniture. This had been his room when they'd first stayed here, at the BBC's expense. Siobhan had been in Valois. "We'll all eat together in half an hour. Come down when you're ready." Duncan and Lisa were old friends now, but that was not Andrew's motivation for staying here. He simply could not face the prospect of kneeling in the garden in the dark, fumbling in a muddy hole in the ground to turn on the mains water, of climbing the rickety ancient outside ladder up into the loft to turn on the heating, of sleeping in a freezing cold house between damp sheets. He enjoyed the meal en famille, especially the conversation with the little ones, Hattie and Tom. Children always lifted his spirits. Lisa's cooking was, as ever, to die for. "We thought you might have decided to sell up," she said. "It would be sensible, wouldn't it? I have to wait 7 years, I'm afraid." November 10th, 2009. He slept long and late, and Duncan came and banged on his door at 10 o'clock to berate him for being a lazy git, as he himself had done half a day's work already. Andrew declined breakfast, left around 11:30, walked through the mist and drizzle to keep appointments at the bank and with the notary, ate lunch in a small restaurant off the main square, and then did essential shopping for the week at Leclerc and Bricot Marché. He decided to go the long way round to La Salesse via Saint-Hilaire. The approach to the house driving down from Saint-Sulpice always filled him with dread and gloom now. He parked in the Place de l'Église in Saint-Hilaire, putting off the evil hour just a little longer. He opened his umbrella and strolled around the village. Children were tumbling out of the École Primaire into the schoolyard for La Récréation, the most life you would ever see in this dead and alive hole. Talking of dead and alive holes, there was the cemetery. It had a stunning display of flowers on the gravestones, mostly chrysanthemums or roses, all in pots. Of course, Le Jour des Morts, the Day of the Dead, had been only last week. The deserted cemetery was immaculate, like those houses where you take your shoes off at the door. Andrew went in, walked over pristine white marble chips between the silent ranks of tombs, reading the inscriptions. Here was a wife grieving over her lost darling husband. A mon mari chéri, à jamais dans mon cœur, regrets éternels. And now he read another heartfelt expression of everlasting love. Le temps efface tout, mais jamais le souvenir. Among the many inscriptions on tablets posed like picture frames on one gleaming marble tomb, he read, Les anciens combattants et les prisonniers de guerre saluent leurs camarades. He pictured the old men clasping their beret to their breast, standing to attention in silent tribute at a comrade's funeral. Well, this would be as good a resting place as any, better than a soulless crematorium at least. It would be fitting too, in a way, to end up in France. After all, this was where he had died 3 years ago this month. Maybe they could both end up here, together again one day. Andrew shrugged, pulled himself together, and shut the cemetery gate behind him with a clang. Well, that did me the power of good, I must say. I needed cheering up like that. He forced a smile to fortify himself and drove the last stretch to La Salesse. He would be there by 4, with still plenty of light left. As he approached the hamlet, the rain ceased suddenly, the skies cleared, and the sun came out, bathing the meadows and the handsome Limousin cattle in a warm orange glow. He swung round the bend at the end of the hamlet and pulled into the driveway. Good God! He blinked and looked again at the house. The shutters were open. There was a light on in the kitchen. The garage doors were flung wide open, and a mountain bike was resting against the wall. He got out of the car and took a closer look at the bike. It was Siobhan's snazzy yellow bike, the one they had bought at Decathlon in Limoges. What the devil was going on? He had respectfully cleaned and polished that bike until he could see his face in the mudguards, then hung it in its rightful place in the garage. Now here it was, spattered with mud. Who had been in the garage? And who was in the kitchen? Only Monsieur Félix, the previous owner of the house, who must be 83 by now, knew the secret location of the spare key. Could it be the old guy? Had Alzheimer's finally got him? Andrew looked around. The half-acre of paddock had been neatly mown. The fruit trees looked as though they had been expertly pruned, and the customary weeds were missing from the front garden. Weird. It was almost like Chatsworth. He walked to the front door, opened it gingerly, and called out nervously. Il y a quelqu'un? Anybody there? No answer. He opened the kitchen door and was met by delicious cooking smells and further evidence of a meal being prepared. He called out again. Il y a quelqu'un? Is there anybody there? March 7th, 2006. Andrew waved to Katie at reception as he passed her on his way in. As he reached the office door, he remembered he needed to ask if there was a message from the MOT centre. He turned back. Katie was now in huddled conversation with Julie, his boss's secretary. Is Andrew married? He looks as though he needs a good woman to knock him into shape, he heard Katie's stage whisper. They say he's gay, came the mumbled reply. He considered for a moment, given a lifetime of outstanding failure to attract the opposite sex, whether batting for the other side might not be worth a try. But then he had no urge to ravish his handsome young new boss, so perhaps not. The MOT would have to wait. Siobhan was standing behind him now, grinning. She had heard too. So, gay boy, you know they're sending me with you to Limousin. I'll be your cub reporter. The BBC was sending Andrew to France next week to investigate the phenomenon of British people moving to live out there. No, first I've heard of it. Good, that'll be good. I'm not gay, by the way. Don't worry, they say the same about me. Siobhan's a leser. Na, 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 na. And are you? Do I look like I am? Andrew glanced her up and down. Severely shorn iron-grey hair, total absence of makeup, baggy trousers, sensible shoes, dumpy figure. Absolutely not. So, it'll be just us two old gays together then. Shall I book some digs? Siobhan decided it was a good idea to stay with English people and chose Duncan and Lisa's B&B in La Souterraine. She and Andrew got on famously, found it easy to work together, and had a whale of a time into the bargain. On their final day in France, Duncan approached them at the breakfast table with a sheet of paper. Is that the damage? Asked Andrew. No, Siobhan's paid already. Our plumber's given us the details of his father-in-law's house. It's been for sale for a while now, and he's somehow got the idea that you're house hunting. Would you look it over on the way to the airport? Just to humour the old guy. And so they let lovely old Monsieur Félix show them round. It was a beautiful sunny morning, and Siobhan was charmed by the house, the garden, and especially the elegant stone-built woodshed. Andrew was impressed by the variety and number of outbuildings, the fruit trees, the four mighty oaks, and the extent of the land around the house. You could be lord of the manor here. I could see us living here, said Siobhan quietly. Yes, I think we could live here. We? Who we? Us we. You and me we. She was looking at the view now. You would have to marry me first, though. Andrew thought he never would understand women. Better get going for the airport. Don't want to risk being late. November 10th, 2009. Andrew opened the door into the salon comme salle à manger. Logs were burning merrily in the fireplace. He realized that the house was as warm as toast. A vase of fresh flowers stood on the dining room table, Tulips, Siobhan's favourite. This was getting more and more like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Did he have squatters? Life's surprises come in all shapes and sizes, he thought, and realised he had just invented a new proverb. He was now more than a little alarmed, and a shiver ran through his body, despite the unaccustomed cosiness of the house. He picked up the poker, went back through the kitchen, and opened the door to the bathroom. He was greeted by familiar feminine aromas. Je reviens, he thought. Someone was using her scent. He walked along the hallway and checked the two bedrooms. Who's been sleeping in my bed? The bed was made up in the double room. Still no one to be seen. He walked back along the hallway, out of the front door and round the back of the house. She had her back to him, taking in the washing, women's clothing and underwear. But he knew straight away that it was her. He knew her by heart. The curve of her back as she stretched up to reach the washing line. The shape of her calf and her right ankle as her heel lifted from the ground. Her hair was longer now, shoulder length, and it was as dark as ever. He watched her for a minute and then cleared his throat. She turned to look at him. She looked younger, but it was her.
Oh, good, you're here, Cherie. I was expecting you earlier, perhaps even last night.
Was it really her? Was she an hallucination? She walked over to him and dumped the wash basket on the wall.
What are you doing with that poker? Come on, then. Give me a hug. It's been ages. Lost your tongue?
He had. They hugged. She was real, all right. They went inside together. She put the kettle on, and Andrew found his tongue at last.
Where the hell have you been, Siobhan? 3 years, for God's sake. You can't just walk in and put the kettle on after 3 years. I've been out of my mind. What have you been doing all this time? I thought it was all over for me.
Too many questions. They can wait. It's not all over for you. You have all the time in the world. Anyway, I didn't just come in and put the kettle on. I tidied up the garden, pruned the fruit trees, persuaded Jean-Pierre to mow the paddock. Oh, I promised him €20 for that, by the way. Cooked your dinner, made the bed, built a fire, cleaned the... Andrew interrupted her flow. Please stop. Okay. The questions can wait. I'm just so pleased to have you here again. He kissed her and all the old desire came flooding back. I had forgotten what this was like. They walked together, hand in hand, not rushing, to the bedroom, where they made love slowly, softly, delicately, not rushing. They had all the time in the world. Siobhan had made a cassoulet with duck breast, Toulouse sausage and rabbit. They ate it with Andrew's favourite rat du Touquet potatoes and drank a bottle of Margaux between them. Andrew washed up and stacked the dishes on the draining board. They went out into the garden and walked hand in hand in silence through the paddock, out of the far gate and through the hamlet, their familiar evening routine under the billion Limousin stars. I love you very much, said Andrew, and I have so missed you. Thanks for coming back.
I said I would.
That night in bed, she flicked off the bedside lamp, kissed him gently, and turned away from him. She wriggled her bottom into his loins until she was comfortable. He felt her melt into his body.
Okay, demon lover, she murmured. It's been a long day. Save it for later. I'm knackered.
Me too. I was only showing willing. But she was asleep already, her breathing soft and regular, and she was making those little fluttering noises with her lips. Within a minute, he was asleep too. April 28th, 2006. The boss called Andrew and Siobhan into his office to congratulate them on the success of their half-hour programme. It had received such an enthusiastic reception from both public and critics that it was going to be broadcast nationally on Radio 4. Siobhan grinned at Andrew as they left.
Not bad for two old gays, eh?
Yes, we make a great team. He looked at her. She had had her hair styled, expensively by the look of it, She had dyed it black or navy blue, he wasn't sure which, and drawn it back over her ears into a short ponytail. It suited her. She had applied a pink lipstick and had taken to wearing fashionable clothes. She had lost weight, almost as much as he had, and she smelled nice. Andrew raised one finger, as if asking permission to speak.
You know that thing you said in France?
That thing?
Yes, that thing about the house.
Well, that narrows it down. She was torturing him. He was sure she was torturing him. Women did that.
When we were looking at the house, you said...
His voice trailed away. She put him out of his misery.
Are you proposing to me, Andrew?
I think I am.
Yes, then. The answer's yes. I thought you'd never ask.
They handed in their notice at the radio station. Siobhan sold her house. They kept on Andrew's flat as a pied-à-terre in England and bought Monsieur Félix's house in La Salette. One day in June, they completed the purchase of the house and married twice in Saint-Sulpice, first in the mairie and then in the cavernous ancient church. Their wedding was witnessed, in their Sunday best, by Duncan and Lisa, with Hattie and Tom as bridesmaid and page boy. Siobhan's elder sister, Maureen, came too.
What's all the rush? Has he got you pregnant?
Siobhan wore white satin. Her wedding ring was the 9-carat ring with the Celtic cross motif that Andrew had bought her the day before at the huge brocante in Les Grands Chaisaux for €50. The honeymoon they spent renovating the house, putting the garden, orchard and paddock in order and getting to know each other. The more they knew each other, the more they liked each other. And so it went on. By November they were almost there. The final touch, Andrew's installation of a new kitchen, plumbing and all, followed the interior decoration of the house. He turned on the taps, checked for leaks and stood back to admire his work. Siobhan was in the garden, pruning, ripping out brambles from the hedges. He joined her and they made a celebratory bonfire of the debris.
"Have to get everything done today," said Siobhan. "Tomorrow's a national holiday, Armistice Day."
In the gloaming, they burnt the last of the rubbish, fell back exhausted on the damp grass, and gazed into the bonfire.
"We did it. Feels good, doesn't it?"
"So," he said, "what are we going to do now on those long winter evenings, with no telly and no jobs to do?" She grinned at him and winked. "Take a wild guess.
You salacious siren, you. You saucy strumpet. My grandmother would have called you a fast-brazen hussy."
Neither of them had the strength to cook that night, and so they drove up to the restaurant at Lac de Mondon. They drank too much to drive home and walked back the 4 kilometres, arm in arm in the moonlight, without seeing a soul or even a car. That night in bed, Siobhan flicked off the bedside lamp and kissed him gently good night. She wriggled her bottom against him until she was comfortable, and he felt her melt into his body.
"Je regrette, chérie," she murmured. "Pas de hanky-panky. It's been a long day. I'm knackered."
"I love you, darling. We're a great team."
"Je t'adore, Marie chérie."
She loved to practice her French on him. He felt her breathing, soft and regular. She was making those little fluttering noises with her lips that he called her pathetic attempt at snoring. He believed it was not possible to be happier. Within a minute he was asleep too. November 11th, 2006. They had a leisurely breakfast of fruit and cereal. Siobhan volunteered to cycle up to the lake and fetch the car.
"You can stay here and wait for the butcher's van. I need the exercise."
"As if." He waved to her as she cycled off. She waved back and wobbled alarmingly.
"Je reviens, chérie."
"I love it when you talk dirty," he called after her. Siobhan did not come back, and his ignoble last words to her were engraved forever on his memory. For the first 2 days, the police failed to take his plea for help seriously. This was probably just another marital squabble, and she would be back soon, unless she had taken a lover. Andrew spent day and night searching frantically between home and the lake, by daylight and by torchlight. On the third day, he found her cycle helmet in a ditch, then her mountain bike, dumped in a field about 3 kilometres from home. The police now took him more seriously, but their extensive searches of the surrounding area bore no fruit. After 2 weeks of scouring every ditch, hedge and wood, helped by dozens of local volunteers, the police gave up the hunt. A photo of Siobhan was published on television, on the internet, and in the local and national press. Andrew had hundreds of posters printed and pasted them on every tree or telegraph pole he could find. For months afterwards, Siobhan's face stared from every shop window. Avez-vous vu cette femme?
There were many sightings, some of them hopeful.
But after 6 months, Capitaine Joubert, the inspector in charge of the case, told Andrew he had to give up hope. Andrew stayed, wasted by grief, still searching day and night, on foot, by bike and by car, until the following November, after the anniversary of Siobhan's disappearance. Then he could bear it no more, and retreated to the familiar sights and sounds of his native city that had been his world before Siobhan. Twice a year he came back, once in November to check on the house and turn on the heating for the winter, once in March to turn the heating off again and make sure the house was still standing. November 11th, 2009. Siobhan was up and out of bed when Andrew woke. He felt good. There was no sign of his lovely wife around the house. She would be pegging out washing, off on her bike buying bread or something. She would be busy anyway. She was always busy. He went in the bathroom, scrubbed his teeth especially hard, and had a refreshing shower. He heard a knock at the door and pulled on his dressing gown. Two men were at the door. Capitaine Joubert spoke first.
Monsieur Milburn, je vous présente mon collègue Philippe Camus. Monsieur Milburn, I will speak English.
I have some news.
About your wife, Madame Milburn.
Oh, yes, isn't it wonderful? She's around somewhere. I'll go and get her.
The inspector looked puzzled and exchanged a look with his junior colleague, who shuffled uncomfortably.
We believe we have found your wife, Monsieur Milburn. A fisherman on the lac de Saint-Pardou, about 50 kilometres from here. He encountered your wife's remains yesterday in the lake. We identify her from a ring, the one with the strange motif, whose description you gave us at the time of her disappearance. I am sorry, monsieur.
Andrew wanted to laugh, but restrained himself, afraid to damage the inspector's professional pride. The younger agent de police looked down at his feet. Andrew saw the deep sorrow in the inspector's eyes.
It can't possibly be her, Capitaine Joubert. She's here. I'll get her.
He pushed past the two policemen and ran out into the garden. She was not there. He scoured the orchard and the paddock. He ran to the garage. The door was still wide open. His car was there, and Siobhan's snazzy yellow bike was now hanging neatly on the wall, looking like new. He ran to the barn, to each and every shed, throwing open doors, shouting her name, but he knew she was gone. The inspector took his arm and ushered him back into the house.
Calmez-vous, monsieur. Je vois que vous souffrez. Asseyez-vous un moment.
Andrew sat down on the sofa.
Philippe, prépare un tisane pour monsieur Milburn.
The young man disappeared into the kitchen and came back with a mug of chamomile tea, which he handed to Andrew.
We shall know for certain tomorrow if it is your wife, monsieur. Today is a holiday in France, but we shall send to England for her dental record tomorrow. At last you can find tranquillité of the spirit, perhaps.
The two policemen stayed for a further hour, drinking tea and talking about the weather, as they knew English people were wont to do, until they were happy that he was safe to be left on his own. Andrew said goodbye. He was chilled through from sitting in his dressing gown. He tidied away the dishes, cutlery and pans stacked on the draining board from the previous evening. He went to the bedroom, climbed back into the bed and buried his face in the pillow, her pillow. He breathed in her fragrance and heard her voice again.
Je reviens, chérie.
Yes, she would be back. He must remember to give Jean-Pierre the 20 euros.
These few vintages I'd share with you. These vintage years I'd share with you.
Je Reviens was read by the author. This was a Lucerne Villa production for John Foster Stories.